has been described as the controller. He enters the three worlds and supports everything. Everything means everything and everyone. He is supporting us all. This position of supporting and protecting the universe cannot refer to the condition jiva, because he cannot perform such actions. Raise your hand if you are currently supporting and maintaining the universe. So it's obviously not us. So someone may think, well, then maybe the liberated souls are doing it. But no, the liberated souls, they have nothing to do with the material world. That's what Baladev says next. It cannot refer to the liberated jiva because he is devoid of interaction within the world. And clearly, when someone becomes liberated, they don't become one with the Supreme, because then there would be no need of mentioning there are two kinds of living entities. And then a third one. There would only be the Lord and the conditioned soul. And if you were a Mayavadi, you'd say, as soon as you stop being a conditioned soul, you become one with God. No. But there's the liberated, the conditioned, and then Anye Tveva Madanta. How does that one begin? What is the beginning? Yasmat Charo, that's this one? The last one? Again. Uttama Purusha Ta Anya Paramatma Tivadari Taya Loka Taya Visha Mabat Jaya Ishvara Uchite. Okay. So now we've heard the entirety of Vedanta. This is knowledge. This is what the Vedas are meant to lead us to understand. There's the conditioned soul, the liberated soul, and beyond them is the Supreme Person who is the one maintaining the universe. Okay. Now it's 12:30. Who is the exact time? Abhishek, what's the exact... Oh yeah, you're the timekeeper.
12:31.
Okay, 12:31. 15 minutes break, and then we'll finish this chapter. So could you remind everyone 2 minutes before, please? Okay, thank you. But that was Vedanta in three verses, spoken by the knower of Vedanta, the compiler of Vedanta. Hello, welcome.
I
know, welcome to the front of the class.
Because I came in late.
That's okay, I saw you. So let us... There are six verses in this section of the Bhagavad Gita. And how many have we covered?
Three.
Four.
Four.
Three or four?
Four.
All those who think four, raise your hand. Yes, of course it's four. Because there are the three-verse summary of Vedanta, plus the introductory verse, the Savasya Chaham, Vindesana Visto, where Krishna says that I know by the Vedas I am to be known, and I know Veda as it is. And then that was the 15th verse. And how about, what was the subject matter of the 16th verse? Mataji, you know? Without looking. Yes. The fallible, and there are two kinds, the conditioned souls and the liberated soul. And then the 17th verse? Yeah. Uttama Purusha Tva Anya. But, the two means but there's another kind, an Uttama Purusha. There are two Purushas, and here's a third Purusha. Purusha means person. Paramatma Tivada. He's called the Paramatma. And the difference between this one and the other two, and this one, enters into the universes and maintains them. Just if you ever maintain a family or to even maintain your body or something, it takes so much effort. Just imagine if you were in charge of maintaining the universe. How powerful you have to be to maintain a universe. Well, Krishna maintains an unlimited number of universes with just a small part of his potency. So that gives us... So therefore, Brahma said, your potency is inconceivable to me. Let others say they know something about God. I won't say I understand anything. It's too inconceivable. And the third of the Vedanta verses.
That in whatever, even exhaustible person, he maintains.
That's the second one. Yeah? Yasma Chara. Yes, he's beyond both the fallible and establishing his position. Clearly is beyond the fallible and the infallible, the different quality or quantity really of Supreme Person. The difference between a drop of water in the ocean. Chara, because atosmi loke vedas, because of that I am known in the Vedas, because Krishna has just said that I am to be known by the Vedas. By the Vedas, Vedas Chastava, Hameva Vidyaho. So here he says, Yaloka Traya Avishya, excuse me, in the last one, Atosmi Loke Vedacha, by the people of the world, in this world, and in the Vedas, I am known as the Purushottam, as the Supreme Person. Now, this is the Vedanta in summary. The entirety of Vedanta, and if anyone ever asks you if you're speaking in learned Sanskrit circles, do you know Vedanta? Have you studied Vedanta? You can say yes. And you can recite these three verses, and they can say, well, that's not Vedanta. And then you say, are you more an authority than Krishna? So now, in the 19th verse, we're going to hear about what, if you know this, if you truly understand these three verses, which is Vedanta, if you truly understand this knowledge, Veda, knowledge, Anta, the end of knowledge, if you truly understand this, what will you do? So we'll go to the next one and see. Yes, whoops. Now one more. One who knows Krishna as that Supreme Person, or you could say the Super Soul or Krishna acting in that way, he knows everything. This is what knowledge, the conclusion of knowledge is. He knows everything. And should we be satisfied just knowing? I know Krishna is the Supreme Person and then I don't have to do anything? No. Naturally, when one understands and knows Krishna is the Supreme Person, then one serves him fully with devotion, or one serves him with full devotion. Either one. But fully with devotion. Now here is this 19th verse. We've lost some of our Vedanta students. Or maybe after learning Vedanta, they decided I don't need to know anything else. So therefore, I'll go and play ping pong. But Krishna says here, in this verse we shall hear, that if we actually know Vedanta, we'll serve him with great devotion. So therefore one of the devotees says, I'm going to serve now. My serve.
Yomamevam samudho janati purushottamam sasavavid bhajante mam bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata.
Everyone please. Yo mam, ya, anyone, mam, me, anyone who knows me, evam, thus, as we have just described, as Krishna has just described, asamudho, without doubting. And if one, there's the word muda in there, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, if you doubt Krishna's words, then you're a muda. But one who understands this, that there is the fallible, the infallible, and the supreme person, and that supreme person is maintaining us and supporting us, even in our material endeavors. And he is maintaining us and supporting us in our spiritual endeavors. And he will give us more and more and more. And one who understands how Krishna is the one who is feeding us in so many ways, materially and spiritually, without doubting. In other words, when that's fixed in one's consciousness, fixed, irrevocably fixed in one's consciousness, that I am depending on Krishna, then sasarvavid. Sarvavid means he knows everything. He knows everything. This is the conclusion that is to be reached. And once one knows this, bhajati mam. Mam means me. He worships me. But not only worships. The word bhaj, as Prabhupada will explain it, but we know it doesn't mean just worship. It's a seva. Devotional service, worship, services in that concept of bhaj, activity, but springing from devotion, which is based on true knowledge of our eternal true relationship with Krishna. So he knows everything, and therefore bhajati mam, he worships Krishna with great devotional surrender and love. How does he do this? One who truly understands this word sarva bhavena Bharata. He's talking to Arjuna, O Bharata, because why does he call Arjuna Bharata? Because he's in that dynasty. But how does he worship Krishna? Sarva bhavena. How does Prabhupada translate that? Who has a Bhagavad Gita? How does Prabhupada translate sarva bhavena? Sarva we know is all. Bhavena?
All respect.
Okay, now think about what that word means. In all respects, or sarva bhavena. What does that mean to you? Huh? All circumstances? Good. Absolutely.
With respect,
yes, certainly, with respect, but in complete surrender. What is that? What? Think about what these words mean. Yeah, if you love someone, see, what's not spoken here, which comes out in the next section, we'll read if Krishna allows tomorrow, and in the next section too, and which is our whole process. If someone is maintaining you in all respect, it's taking care of you. What should naturally be your relationship with that person? Well, yeah, dependent. How would you reciprocate? Huh? Yeah, gratitude. And gratitude is the beginning of. Just stop thinking from your intellects. For a second, think about your parents. Yes, if someone is caring for you and caring for you and caring for you and caring for, just naturally, it's just the most natural thing in the world to want to reciprocate with them. because you love them. Now, why do parents take care of their children? There's one element is duty, but it's so much more than that, really. Huh? What did? That was the father speaking in the background about the son over there. But that, of course, is a joke. But sometimes people do that. And therefore they're dutifully maintained by their children. But that's not the essence of the relationship. It's love. The parents work and work and work out of affection. There's duty in there, yes. And maybe even there's, I'll get something back from it one day. The old age pension concept. Maybe that's there too to some degree. But it's just the natural thing is the love. That's the deepest. In material world, all the relationships are polluted by that type of selfishness. The old age pension kind and even just the duty kind. But that's the speciality of spiritual love. That it is just based on true love and there is not the slightest tinge of selfishness. And therefore we have to change our conception to attain the spiritual world of what love is. Because otherwise it's lust. Kamendriya priti. There's selfishness in there. But what Krishna, when Krishna maintains all living entities, is he doing it because of he wants an old age pension? Someone to take care of? No, because Krishna doesn't get old. You never see a picture of an old man. Krishna's an old man. And he's completely independent. So there's no duty he has to perform either. Because one performs duty out of some responsibility that's given to you from someone above or something like that. Or it says in the scriptures or in the culture that you have to do that. But Krishna is beyond all that. And all that's left, therefore, the reason why he maintains this is out of his deep affection for his part and parcels. We come from Krishna. We are his. We are of Krishna. We are of him and we belong to him. What chapter of Bhagavad Gita where Krishna explains that? Huh? No? The one I'm looking for is... Yes, in the fourth chapter. Yaj gyadva napuna moham evam yasyasi pandava yena bhutana sheshani draksas yatma atomari. When you have thus seen the truth, when you actually have realized the truth, from inquiring from the spiritual master, what we realize, having obtained real knowledge from the self-realized soul, you will never again fall into such illusion. For by this knowledge, you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. We are Krishnas. This is actually who we are. We are Krishnas. And Krishna is ours. This is the wealth of a spiritualist. He has realization of this when you have actually seen the truth. And if Krishna is yours and you are Krishna's, how much anxiety are you going to be in the material world? How are you going to pay the rent and etc., etc., etc.? None. How are you going to do that? There's no anxiety. Therefore, a devotee, therefore, can actually, if he's living in Krishna's mercy in this way, he can be free from anxiety living in this material world. Everyone else has to be in anxiety because they are maintaining themselves and controlling everything. What a task to control the universe so it cooperates with my desires and my needs. Can you see why you're going to be in anxiety all the time? You have to control the universe to make it cooperate with you. Do you think the universe is going to cooperate with you? All those who think the universe is going to cooperate with them, forget it. It simply refuses to cooperate. That's the business of the universe. To refuse to cooperate with your desires. Prahlad Maharaj even says, what I've experienced in this world is what I want to happen doesn't happen, and what I don't want to happen happens. That's the universe at its best. Fully non-cooperative. According to our karma, we get some cooperation. We think, oh, now things are properly working. I've got it organized. And then the piano lands on our head. You know, someone pushes the enter button and the piano lands on our head in one form or another. But that's the universe, the way it's meant to work. And therefore, the devotee understands reality and just doesn't get involved on that level. And he puts himself, he understands it's Krishna, and therefore I'm going to serve Krishna. How am I going to serve Krishna? That we find out from Shastra, from Guru, from Sadhus. It doesn't mean we neglect our duties in any way, but we place Krishna in the center because yomam evam asamuto janati prasama savavit. Vajante mam, I've understood this and I'm worshipping Krishna. How? Sava bhavena, in all respects. Possibly the easiest way to get at the meaning of sava bhavena that I want to get at is think of it, what would you give to Krishna if you're giving him everything in all respects? Or the word is everything. You're giving him everything. And perhaps the easiest way to understand it is to think, what am I holding back? Well, what are you holding back if you're giving Krishna, serving him in all respects? Huh? Nothing. You're not holding anything back. And what's it called when you have a relationship with someone, when you're giving them everything and you're not holding back anything? Love. So although it's not directly stated here, this is what it means. If you really understand Krishna, sasavavid, if you know him as the Purushottama, and ultimately Krishna is called Lila Purushottama, that's how he's known in Vrindavan, then you really know everything. And then you serve him, you bhaj, your devotion is to him. How? To what degree? Is it 10% Krishna, 90% me? Or is it 90% Krishna and 10% me? None. Not 99.999999 either. It's unalloyed. What is an alloy?
It's a mixture of two metals.
And what's the opposite? So, when Prabhupada would say unalloyed devotion, what does he mean? There's nothing mixed in with it. There's not the slightest tinge. Can you get any pure metal in this world?
No, 99.99.
Yes. You cannot get anything pure in this world. You can buy, when they talk about 24 karat gold, is it pure gold? There has to be some impurity. So therefore, Nirottama Das Thakur explains that pure devotional service is like gold purified in 100 flames. It's purified and the impurity comes to the surface and it's removed. Then it's purified again in another flame and it's removed. This, if you find yourself suffering in spiritual life, this is what is actually going on. You're just dealing with another flame of impurity, bringing some impurity to the surface. Because a pure soul, something we're attached to that isn't us, that will be ripped from us in time, something on the level of false ego. This is what it means. Because to get, this is what spiritual life means. Because we're our attempt is the greatest of great attempts, and it is not a cheap thing to be in Goloka Vrindavan and serving there, serving Krishna there. There can't be 99.9. So Sarva Bhavena Bharata means with the greatest love, because it's service to Krishna in all respects. This is the fruit of knowledge, of true knowledge. Here's Prabhupada's purport. We'll read just the last paragraph. The word bhajati is very significant. When Prabhupada says very significant, what should we do? In many places the word bhajati is expressed in relationship with the service of the Supreme Lord. If a person is engaged in full Krishna consciousness in the devotional service of the Lord, it is to be understood that he has understood all the Vedic knowledge. Notice that one word, full Krishna consciousness. What does full Krishna consciousness mean? Sarva bhavena, basically. Not holding anything back. It means love. Then he has fully understood the Vedas. In the Vaishnava Parampara, it is said that if one is engaged in the devotional service of Krishna, then there is no need for any other spiritual process for understanding the Supreme Absolute Truth. He has already come to the point because he is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. He has ended all preliminary processes of understanding. But if anyone, after speculating for hundreds and thousands of lives, so Prabhupada is speaking against, because this was a summary of Vedanta. So there are so many Vedantists who study Vedanta. Has anyone ever met a Sanskrit scholar who has studied Vedanta very deeply? Yes?
I think my grandfather's brother.
Your grandfather's brother. Have you met him?
Briefly, yes.
And now is he still in this world? If someone has, in other words, if someone using the ascending process of jnana has studied Vedanta and has come to the conclusion, the Advaita jnana conclusion, that I am the Supreme, but he has missed the whole point. He has not actually reached the proper conclusion and his studying is more or less worthless. So if someone has, after speculating or using this ascending process, studying for hundreds of thousands of lives, if he does not come to the point that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that one has to surrender there, all his speculation for so many years and lives is a useless waste of, because he missed the point. What's the example of that? When you say, if you're putting, we used to do a drummer, the bad old drummer days of called the wrong bank account. You know that you must have done that one. No. When, you know, someone's working very, very hard his whole life and he's just to deposit money in the account and he's putting all his money in his work and you see him as a young boy, a 20-year-old, depositing money and then you see him in middle age with his family and he's depositing money and you see him as an old man and gray and old and wrinkled with no hair. Well, anyway, so what? I look like that. Okay. So then finally, after working so long and depositing all his money in the account, he goes to the bank to make a withdrawal and there's nothing in there. And he had the wrong bank account number all these years. You never saw that corny drama? No. So that's what it's like. You study and study and study and study and study and don't come to the conclusion. Janati Purushottama Uttara Purusha Tvanya Paramatmati Udarita. Then you've missed the whole thing. So this is Prabhupada's point. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, we'll read a short comment. He puts up the doubt. Though this has been established by you, philosophers will argue over the meaning. This isn't the real meaning of these verses. It really means we should become one with Krishna or something. And now he answers that doubt by saying, let them argue. They are bewildered by my maya, and the devotee is not bewildered. He who is not bewildered by the arguments of these philosophers, a samudha, knows everything. Even though he has not studied the scriptures, he is the knower of the meaning of all scriptures because he has reached the conclusion. The other person, though he has indeed studied and even taught all the scriptures, is really a complete fool. So he's taken another meaning of, instead of asamudha, he has divided it differently and is sammudha. A sanmuda, a complete fool. He who knows me worships me with complete love. If one actually knows Krishna, one worships him with complete love. The other person, though he worships something, does not worship me. In other words, if you don't know who Krishna is, if you don't actually know that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you are worshipping him, you think you are worshipping him, but your worship is not actually worship. Baladeva Dibhusan comments. Short comment. The results for those who know the Lord as the Supreme Person are described in order to highlight the meaning of those previous verses. So what's the result? This is what he does. He worships Krishna. Thus, evam, Yomam Evam. Understanding the facts according to the meaning of the words that as I have spoken them, rather than according to mere dictionary definitions, a person no longer has doubts, asamudha, regarding my position as the Supreme Person. Knowing the meaning of these three verses, he is the knower of everything, sarvavit, because these three verses are the purport of the Vedas. This is Krishna himself speaking. He who knows my position as the Supreme Person worships me by all methods, sarva bhavena. He who gets my mercy can know the meaning of all the Vedas and perform all the angas of bhakti. In other words, this is true knowledge leads to devotional service. And we are not against that type of knowledge. We're against speculative knowledge. One concludes, because by one's intelligence, this is the ultimate, one concludes that spirit is everything. There is a oneness of everything. But that, and Krishna will give one that. But his own pure devotion, his braja bhakti, he doesn't give so easily, because by that he is controlled and purchased, as we were saying. And now, the final verse in this section. material energy will cooperate. This is the most confidential Shastric knowledge. 20. Iti guyatamam shastram idam uktam mayanaga etad buddha buddhimam syat kritta kritta stavarta. Everyone, please. Guyatamam means the topmost secret. So iti guyatamam shastram, of all the shastras, Krishna in these three verses and the fourth one included, which explains the result of one who has truly understood these three verses or truly has the knowledge of the Vedas. This is the most confidential secret of all the shastras, and mere scholarship cannot have this secret revealed to you. Ida mukva maya naga, and I am disclosing this to you. Why? Because you are anaga. Aga, we know, what does agha mean?
Sin.
You are an anaga. You are sinless or pure, so therefore I'm disclosing this to you. And what does it basically mean to be sinless and pure? It means to be unenvious. Because any improper desire that we have in our heart means ultimately envy of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am the center, not him. Why should he be the center? I should be the center. So that is ultimately the sinfulness of every conditioned soul, that we have envy of our Lord and Master and most cherished possession. So this secret, I'm telling this to you, Arjuna, which is the most confidential meaning of Shastra, because you are sinless. Etad bhutva bhutimam syat. And one who has this knowledge, this understanding, bhutva bhutimam, he becomes buddhimam. He becomes wise. This is true wisdom, to know my relationship with Krishna and to know Krishna's relationship with the material world. Nothing else is wisdom. This is what Krishna is saying. There are so many knowledgeable persons in this world. You can put together an incredible piece of technology, but that is not wisdom. And it is worth ultimately, at the time of death, all that type of knowledge is worth zero. Because you have to leave it behind. You die. Where is your shelter? See, this is the ultimate, not the ultimate conclusion in one sense, but the door, the doorway to bhakti, to love for Krishna. It is understanding where our shelter is and where it is not. So here Krishna is explaining, has explained in Vedanta, where our shelter is, and it is him. It is not our money, it is not our family. It is not our country, it is not my strength, my intelligence, my cleverness, my pride, my ability. That is not my shelter, because Krishna is the shelter of those things. So this is what we are really meant to learn, where our shelter is and where it is not. And this will be valuable to us, the most valuable thing. And it will prove valuable when all these other so-called shelters are withdrawn from us as we go through our life. They are not ours. They are like the clouds in the sky. They look substantial, but when you go through the airplanes, you go past through the clouds, you see that they're just smoke, no substance. We should not take shelter of those things that have no substance. Why? Yeah, right. Wouldn't it be nice if you're in the plane, you see those big fluffy clouds? Wouldn't it be nice to just like... Yeah, exactly. You carry the metaphor. Yeah, there's no substance. They won't support you when you really need it. So Krishna is telling us where our shelter and support is. So whoever understands this will become wise in kritya krityas. His activities, his endeavors will become perfect because he will act in this way. Who's going to read the verse translation? How do you know I want you to read? I was looking for you. But loudly.
The most confidential part of the Vedic scripture, the oath in this one, and it's now disclosed by me. Whoever understands this will become wise and endeavor to know perfection.
Do you know who, did you hear me when we played the singing of the Bhagavad Gita? Did you hear that? Could you learn how to sing Bhagavad Gita slokas like that? Huh? Would you try to learn how to sing Bhagavad Gita slokas in a wonderful way like that? I put you on the spot. Okay, think about it. But it would be really, really nice if you would learn that also, in addition to your other singing. Okay, think about it. We'll read from the end of Prabhupada's purport. The word anagha. What does anagha mean? By which Arjuna is addressed is significant. Anaga, O sinless one, means that unless one is free from all sinful reactions, it is very difficult to understand Krishna. One has to become free from all contamination, all sinful activity, then he can understand. But devotional service is so pure and potent that once one is engaged in devotional service, he automatically comes to the stage of sinlessness. Well, one is performing devotional service in the association. Please remember that because it's very important. Well, one is performing devotional service in the association of pure devotees in full Krishna consciousness. There are certain things which require to be vanquished altogether. The most important thing one has to surmount is weakness of the heart. The first fall down is caused by the desire to lord it over material nature. These are the weaknesses of heart. First thing that has to be removed is the desire to lord it over material nature. Thus one, having that desire, gives up the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. The second weakness of the heart is that as one increases the propensity to lord it over material nature, it becomes attached to matter and the possession of matter. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of the heart. What is the first weakness of heart? Not lording it over material nature. Yes, the desire, more subtle than lording it over, the desire. Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddham. I'm the Lord. I'm the center, based on false ego. And here is my kingdom, this universe. The problems of material existence are due to these weaknesses of the heart. In this chapter, the first five verses describe the process of freeing oneself from these weaknesses of heart. And the rest of the chapter, from the sixth verse to the end, discuss Purushottam Yoga, the yoga of the Supreme Person. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This verse concludes the chapter. In these 20 verses, I have thus spoken completely the most secret teaching. Enter into it deeply. It's very deep. Baladeva Vidyabhusana comments. This knowledge is not revealed to unqualified persons. With that in mind, the Lord speaks iti guhyatamam shastram. It is very secret, and because you are sinless. Thus, I have briefly spoken to you, O Arjuna, the supreme devotee. This scripture composed of three verses defining the supreme person. O sinless one, Anaga, you should not reveal this knowledge to the unqualified who are not pure like you. Understanding this, a person develops full knowledge of the scriptures, this meaning this three verse Vedanta, and he will achieve direct realization, kritya kritya. Thus, knowledge about the Supreme Person is praised in this verse. From the 15th chapter, one learns that the person who is different from the conditioned and liberated souls and who supports both and is superior to both is the Supreme Lord Krishna. That's Baladeva Vidyabhusana's comment. And that's the end of the 15th chapter. And oh, why does it always do that? Now it's got three. Because it doesn't cooperate, because Krishna doesn't want me to get so entangled in this crazy technology that I forget to study. Shastra. Before it's the end of class two, yes, what point struck you most deeply from today's class? Think for a moment. Yes.
You used the analogy of a child in the supermarket and throwing us everything in. Now Krishna is willing to give us everything that we do, not poison.
He's not going to let us drink poison unless we really, really want it. Okay, you want to drink poison, then go ahead.
Be a great musician or a great scientist is something that takes many, many births. What do we want to
Yes. To become a great devotee may take many births also. What do we want? What point struck you most?
These three verses defeat the Mayavadi philosophy by explaining that the Supreme Personality is a person. The Supreme Absolute Truth is a person.
And that Supreme Person is not me. Anyone else? Yes, Prabhu.
If one is unable to Krishna, then Krishna will reveal himself to
him. Thank you. Very nice. Yes. Did you raise your hand? Is you might as well see it that way, because you can't avoid it in Kali Yuga. Yes.
Yes.
Yes, so what is the indestructible health? That is the question that I want to live in. Thank you. Yes.
When you're talking about truth, you're saying unchangeable and using the wall.
Yeah, reality. Thank you. Yeah, wrong bank account. Did you ever see that drama? That little drama? No. Don't live it though. You know, no one wants. Because just imagine if you've done something like that. Of course we laugh at it. And then you realize at the end of your life it all amounted to zero. Just imagine what you're worked so hard and you've accumulated zero of value. Just imagine the lamentation and the depth of the sadness of the heart. Any other? Yes.
I am Krishna, and Krishna in mind is the supreme treasure of the self-realized person. And if we have that realization, then life will be so anxiety-free because we know Krishna will be taking care of it.
Anxiety, yes. Anxiety-free means liberation. But the treasure is greater than even that. Okay. Come on, now when I need you. It's not working. Yes!
Oh, wait! Stop that!
Oh! One more time. Oh, comes on, Jim. What you have to do to get it to work, and you don't know what it's going to do the next time either. Oh. Any questions? Yes.
We understand Brahma Jyoti is a part of the spiritual world, and Krishna is talking in the text 16 about two kinds of living entities, fallible and infallible. And in spiritual world, the infallible living entities reside. And why do the souls have to come down from the Brahma Jyoti?
You mean how we got here into the material world? How did... Yes? Yes, is that the question? How about the fall down of the soul?
The question is, if one gets inside the Brahma Jyoti, he is in the spiritual world, so he becomes infallible, isn't it? Then why does he have to come
down? There are some assumptions in there. So you're saying if a soul becomes perfected in this life and goes to the Brahma Jyoti,
yes,
why does he have to fall down?
Yes.
You know, I asked that question. Not I asked it. I once gave a class. This was in 1968. How old were you in 1968?
I was 8 years old.
8 years old. Arivacha. Okay. You were 8 years old. And I was sitting with Prabhupada in New Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was upstairs, and I was asked to give class, and I didn't know that Prabhupada could hear, because you can imagine how much you'd be in anxiety if you knew that Prabhupada was listening to your class. And the class was on the first canto, and it was about Sukadeva Goswami. And something, I can't remember exactly what it was about, but how he was, it came up in the class that he was Brahman realized, and then he gave up his Brahman realization to develop a personal relationship with Krishna. So at the end of the class, so I said something. So at the end of the class, one devotee asked, well, was that Sukadeva Goswami's personal preference that he gave up impersonal realization, or because it could be that, as opposed to he wanted a personal relationship with Krishna, as opposed, it doesn't necessarily mean that Brahman realization is inferior to Bhagavan realization. That was what he was implying. Yes? You follow so far?
Yeah.
So I answered, you know, and of course you can imagine asking a question like that in a room full of devotees, what's going to happen to you? So, you know, I answered it, no, Bhagavan realization is always higher, and this and that, and Sukadeva, this, that, and that, and then someone else said yes, and as good as I like that. And then at the end of the class, we all walked up the stairs and we went in front of Prabhupada. So he said to me, because I had given the class, "So they have put the question to you." I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." He was smiling. And then one of the devotees said, "Prabhupada, if you go to the Brahma Jyoti, is it that you sometimes fall down? Or that you always or you always will fall down?" And Prabhupada thought for a while. Of course I don't know what he was thinking, but he was trying to answer a difficult question in a way that little baby Hare Krishna devotees who had been chanting for 1 year or 6 months could understand. And he said they always fall down. And then the devotee asked, "Why?" And Prabhupada answered, "Because they get lonely." So, the souls fall down because they get lonely. In other words, we have a natural desire for relationship. And it pushes us in the material world. And it will even push us, that desire, because we're Krishna's part and parcel. We have a relationship with him. And when that's forgotten, something is missing. And we desire relationships. So in the material world, that desire for relationship with Krishna manifests itself as needing relationships in the material world, loving relationships, and feeling so lonely otherwise. And in the Brahma Jyoti, one is not qualified through bhakti to have a relationship with Krishna, but yet one is longing for a relationship. And therefore one has to come to the material world to do that. And Prabhupada explained, even the great, and it could be said that Prabhupada was speaking of those in the material world who have achieved some realization of Brahman. And then he gave the example of Vivekananda. And you can't say this in a room full of Bengalis, because they may get very angry. But he said they preached the whole world was illusion. But then he ended up engaging in material activities of building hospitals. So if the whole world is illusion, there's no reality, what is the sense of building a hospital? Like if I'm dreaming that I'm sick, is the solution to my problem to enter into my dream and build me a dream hospital? Or is the solution just to shake me gently and say, "Prabhupada, wake up, you're having a bad dream." So Prabhupada said, in this way, a Mayavadi, even though they may have some realization of the illusory nature of the material world, they cannot live in that realization. They have to come down because they get lonely for relationships. And I know one fellow who's not a devotee, but he's very deeply impersonally realized, but he gets bored. He goes to the movies, he watches Foxtel all the time. And then when it's time to meditate with his following, he sits there and meditates, and he can stop his mind and realize Brahman. And then when everyone goes, he turns on the television. And there's a famous story about this one in India. There was this one very, very famous Mayavadi. He used to hold satsang in his house. And everyone would sit in Mayavadi satsang. So they just sit, have very deep silence. But there was a cricket match on between Pakistan and India. And he couldn't resist. So during the satsang, he had the cricket match going on the whole time. True. And then some of the people who had come for satsang, they walked out. And then after the match was over, I don't know who won. People said, oh, some of your followers walked out on you, disgusted. And he said, they don't know the real meaning of satsang. Think about that, or don't even bother. And then some of the people who had come for satsang, they walked out. And then after the match was over, I don't know who won. People said, oh, some of your followers walked out on you, disgusted. And he said, they don't know the real meaning of satsang. Think about that, or don't even bother. Long as India won, that was the important thing, obviously. You can't stay in that realization because it's opposed to the nature of the soul. But worse than being thrown out of Brahman realization because of the soul's inherent desire would be for Krishna to grant it to you forever. And the devotees, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur said, Kaivalyam Nirakayate means that is hell. But it takes, because all of us suffering in the material world, we're just so tired of suffering. You know, we just want relief. But compared to the jewel of devotional service, that, which is basically a feeling of loss of existence, is like hell. So in the midst of that long... Was your question answered?
Yeah, actually, we understand the reason why the soul falls down. My actually question was exactly, Krishna talks that in the spiritual world living in it is impossible by nature, so we should not fall down. Whereas we understand that in Brahma Jyoti there are souls which come down.
Implicit in that assumption, therefore I asked you right in the beginning, does this have to do with the souls fall down, or why souls in the Brahma Jyoti fall down? And you said the question has to do with why souls in the Brahma Jyoti fall down. Therefore I answered in that way. So if your question is, so implicit in that, in your question, was an assumption that the souls are in the Brahma Jyoti, and they fall down to the material world from the Brahma Jyoti. But that's an assumption. But exactly why the souls fall down from the spiritual world or whatever, this is such a complicated, controversial question that I'll just read one answer to Prabhupada that Prabhupada gave to that question in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and see if Krishna allows me to find it quickly. Okay, there it is. This is from 20th verse. Actually, the living entity is originally the spiritual part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. But due to his rebellious nature, he is conditioned with the material nature. It does not really matter how these living entities or superior entities of the Supreme Lord have come in contact with the material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knows, however, how and why this actually took place. In the scriptures, the Lord says that those attracted by this material nature are undergoing a hard struggle for existence. Anyway, it goes on. So the point is that with our finite minds, we cannot understand something that happens in the spiritual world or beyond time. We cannot calculate things that are beyond time. But Krishna understands. And the essence, and so some people, some even devotees will say it's like this. And some devotees will say from a different point of view, it's like that. And some devotees will say, we've all come from the Brahma Jyoti. And some will say we had a relationship with Krishna. And some will say we're always here. But it's because we can't understand it with our finite minds. People speak it from different points of view. But Krishna understands why. And when we're pure, then we'll understand. But the real point is not how we got here. This is what Prabhupada mostly emphasized. But to get out. How do we get out? Like find yourself in the middle of the ocean, drowning, the real question is how to escape and how to get home. Anyway, that's my answer to that question. Yes, Mataji?
Being told that people are having impersonal realization, it is worse than karma pandit for just doing their work. This is compared to still work. And there are people in India, who are very sincerely following the Mayavadi philosophy. They are very sincere, they are doing their own prayers, they have their own prayers and all that. But they keep saying ultimately they want to merge with the Lord. That's what they keep saying. But they are very sincere. They are following lots of possibilities.
But what are they sincere about? Wanting to merge with the Lord.
That is true. But actually,
no, that's what you said.
Yes. That's the philosophy they are following. But they are reading all visions as a number.
But they're misunderstanding everything. Because once that seed of wanting to become one with the Lord is in the heart, it's very, very difficult to remove. And then it will kill bhakti. Because you'll think every time we talk about Krishna, people will think, oh, actually that's nice, you know, for them to talk about Krishna, but actually he has no form, and that's even higher. So any Krishna Katha and any desire to perform devotional service, it kills. For someone who simply has materialistic desires, then that can be removed by knowledge. But someone who has the desire to merge in with the Supreme and thinks that's the highest realization, very, very difficult to remove that from the heart. And everything will get turned around and twisted. Yes, the reason why Krishna is saying this is for this reason, but really the highest is. Even when therefore Baladeva Vidyabhusan said, those who worship me, but not understanding that I'm the Supreme Person, that I have an eternal form, they are actually not worshipping me. Because it works in English, it's still worship. But if you use the word bhaj or seva, there's no actual seva there. Because it is not selfless. They want something. When someone is worshipping Krishna with love and devotion, their only desire is to please Krishna. That's love in all respects. But when someone is worshipping to become one with Krishna, they have another desire in there secretly. Like Putana, who wanted to feed Krishna very sincerely, but her desire was to kill Krishna, in fact. And that's what she was really sincere about. Just like if I'm working in an office, and I'm pleasing the boss, and I'm really sincerely serving, but my ambition is to become the boss. So, and then, you know, you're superficially, you're doing everything the boss says, but you actually want to remove him. So when the boss understands you, what's in your mind, He knows this person I have to be very careful about. He's not actually serving me at all. He wants to remove me. What looks like love is envy. So you say sincere, but I question whether that is really what sincerity is. And Baladeva Vidyabhusan says it's not. It's not true worship. It's not seva. It's not bhakti. It's not bhajate. It's envy, in fact. There's one more point in that. The Mayavadi expression is that you do your service, you worship the deity. It's like a ladder to climb the wall. And then once you're at the top of the wall, you no longer need the ladder, you kick it away. So they look at deity worship like that. Is that worship? Is that love? Is that seva? Is that sincerity? No. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. True worship of Krishna with devotion in all respects, ki jai.